It's time for To The Last Drop podcast with Liam Del Carme and Brendan Nell.
Well, the big game against Ireland's gone. We're back. This is To The Last Drop. This is episode 13. I'm Brendan Nell, and with me is Liam Del Carme. Liam, the aftermath of that game is we've almost moved on very quickly from that aftermath because the World Cup doesn't stand still, and we've got to make sure that Springboks qualify for the quarterfinals.
Yeah, you're right. The World Cup very much is the old rolling caravan. We don't stay in one spot for very long. You can try and dwell on something, something significant. And let's be honest, that Springbok Ireland game was something significant. A hell of an occasion. To be fair, it was something in the making for more than 3 years. So almost 1,000 days since we knew, you know, these two teams were going to clash in Paris. And it was a fitting occasion because, I mean, the build-up to that game and the day itself, the scenes outside Stade de France and also in the game itself, there was a nervous energy, a bit of a tension. In fact, I think I wrote that the game itself, I mean, what I was trying to describe now was the sort of the pre-match scenes, you know, just involving fans. Because you just got the sense nobody wants to lose this game. And in the game itself, it was a really intense affair. I made the point in copy that, it wasn't a carnival of rugby. It wasn't a festival of rugby. Because there was a brutality to that game that you very rarely see. You also got the impression that like it's the game has moved on so much that it's like you get the sense it's like it's been designed by men and women in a laboratory because everything is so sterile and clinical and like the way these men push themselves on the field. I mean, they know exactly the next move. They in terms of their physical preparation, they couldn't be better prepared. So. It's you think of that game and you think to yourself, wow, how are they going to top that?
Look, I mean, I obviously had it a very different way. And I think let's before we get into too much on that game, let's first start with the Bok team because that's the current news. And sorry to make you go off on this tangent, but I'm going to bring you back here, Liam, and we're going to first do the Bok news because people want to talk about Andre Pollard. So so let's do that, and we're going to get into the nuts and bolts of that game. Yeah, the Bok team was named last night. Andre Pollard is back. That was the one significant thing. The second significant thing was, Dwayne Vermeulen at 7. And then the hooker situation with not so much Dion Faris starting, but more Marco van Staden actually being in the hooker number 16 jersey on the bench. Andre's the obvious talking point. But the Boks have been going out of their way to play it down and say, that he's not, Rossi said the other day, he's not Superman. And there tends to be a belief, sort of almost, I was with fans in Paris, and there tends to be a belief amongst a lot of people that, you know, Andre is going to walk in and suddenly it's a silver bullet and everything has been, you know, all our goal-kicking woes will be solved and everything will be fine again. Just what's your take on that?
The coach also addressed that matter. Jacques Nienaber, when he was obviously he was pushed on a few questions related to that, fairly similar to us. He didn't use the word that Pollard isn't Superman, but he said that people there should be a particular expectation, or the expectation should be realistic. You know, they can't have this expectation that Andre is going to get into the team and will be in the starting lineup. And then just soothe all their ills. Because in many ways, Marnie Lubbock and Damien Willemse, when they've played 10 for the Boks, have taken them in a different direction, but like there's been more dynamism about the attack, certainly. You can't expect Andre Pollard to step into that situation now and take the game, the Bok game, to where the other two took it. And then also, I suppose, I mean, if you play flower for the Springboks, there's a certain expectation about, you know, the boxes that you need to tick. Will he make all his tackles? Will he, you know, command that channel the way he'd used to? That's probably one question. What will his tactical kicking be like? And lo and behold, I mean, what will his goal kicking be like? If he misses a few, what then? So people's expectations should be, a little bit muted. And, I think they were kind of begging for time. Just give the guy time to come back. He hasn't played for so long. But then again, they showed faith in him. And if you step into that position, if you play for the Springboks, if you're in the starting team, you expect the guy to be good to go. So, that's the kind of a counter argument I would have. But you could understand that they want to draw the sting out of the whole debate.
Well, I mean, that was my first thing. I was thinking, what happens if he steps up on Saturday, misses an easy kick, and maybe misses a second kick? Then, what's the angst and what's the reaction going to be? Yeah, I think Jacques's right. You have to be realistic because, I mean, the guy hasn't played international rugby, for more than a year? The Bok game plan has evolved also in this last year into something very different than when he was playing. There was a lot more box kicking when he was playing. There's a lot more attacking nowadays. And, I just feel, there's so much pressure on the guy. And fair enough, the position, the Springbok 10 position, comes with its own sort of pressure anyway. But it just almost feels like, there's an expectation, that everything will be fine now Andre is back. And in a way, it's also the Bok's own making, because if they, we've spoken about it several times on this pod, about how they did the selection and how they spoke about Andre's injury and how him being out, that there was all these conspiracy theories going around. So it's almost exacerbated that whole situation a bit more, that now suddenly, it's the worst thing. And to me, I feel a bit sorry for Marnie Lubbock because, to be very honest, he deserves a bit of criticism for not making regulation kicks. But
Of course. If you play for the Springboks, there's certain things you don't do, then it comes with the territory.
But I mean, I think it was if their tactics were a bit different against Ireland, and maybe they didn't take those two long kicks, and maybe they backed their pack a bit more. The conversation might have been very different. When you talk about 11 points being left on the board, 6 of those points were 50-50 kicks. And, it's almost as if the Bok sort of backed themselves into a corner there. So, I'm looking forward to seeing what Andre can bring. I must admit my expectations are a bit tempered. I think, as Jacques Nienaber said, and maybe we should listen to his words, just exactly what they expecting from Andre on Saturday, Sunday. Sorry, Sunday.
Jacques, what is your goal-kicking pecking order?
The goal-kicking pecking order for this weekend? Okay. So that's a good question. And I'm going to spend some time on this because I think on the goal-kicking thing, and I think it will be, is Andre now the number one? Is it Marnie? Is it goal-kicking? Is that the reason why there's a one and a two? There's three realities that must be seen as a unit. It can't be seen separately. So, okay, the first reality is, I think it's for all to see that we probably are not as consistent off the tee as one should hope we can be. I think in some games we kick 100%. If you go back at history, you will find that there's some test matches where we didn't miss a kick at goal. Like France, 2022, we didn't miss a kick at goal, and we used three different kickers on that specific night. But we are not consistently there. So that's the first reality. The second reality is that the guy who probably is the most consistent off the tee for us is Andre. I think that's fair to say. But like I mentioned, he's been injured. He didn't participate in any test matches for us for 13 months. And then the third reality is that the guys that had to step up and to take over the 10 role was Damian Willemse and Marnie Lubbock. And in that 13 months that Andre wasn't available for the Springboks, there were 16 test matches, and we won 75% of those 16 test matches. We lost 4. And the 4 test matches we lost is 2 against Ireland, who's the number one team in the world, and everybody is struggling and against them. They haven't lost a test match since the test match against New Zealand in Auckland. And then we lost to New Zealand. And then the other test match that we lost where those two guys were steering the Springboks and driving the team in the 10 jersey was against France in Marseille, where we got the red card. And in three of those test matches, it was very close. Even this past one, I mean, it was up to the 78th minute, there was 2 points in it. So I think that's the reality. Yes, we are not consistent off the tee. But Andre was injured, and he was in the past the most consistent guy for us up the tee. But the guys that stepped in, I don't think they did a bad job. Maybe off the tee. But I mean, in terms of win percentage and steering the team and getting good results. And out of those 16 test matches, only three was at home. So 13 was away from home. So I think they also... So I think... The whole goal-kicking thing, the fly-off thing that is building up, I think the people out there and the fan, must. It's not just as simple thing as, is it goal-kicking? It's not. It's a much more complex thing. And I try to explain it now. And I think the people should know the whole truth, not just only the one thing that maybe is a specific narrative that somebody must drive. You must look at it at a holistic thing, like we look at it. And that's the reality.
You're with Brendan Nell and Liam Delcom on the To The Last Drop podcast.
Look, as Jacques did touch on the fact as well that we were talking earlier about the messaging around the injury and the information they put out, and he admitted, it's not because he was asked, he just admitted that they didn't make all the information, they didn't put it in the public domain. So, you know, if you don't do that, then people will speculate. So some of it is of their own doing. The interesting thing for me now, the return of Pollard in this game in particular, where the Boks now are in search of 5 points, they've made the point. Quagga Smith made the point the other day. He said, no, there can be no doubt. We're looking for 5 points. That's the priority. It's not just the win, it's the 5 points. The way they go about their business, because if it was just about getting the win, you can almost expect Pollard to play in the way he used to play. There are certain strengths that he would play to, but now they would have to play with a bit more attacking urgency. So that in itself, his readiness to embrace where the game has gone, their game has gone. That for me will be a very interesting dynamic.
Yeah, same here, because. If you look at it as well, I mean, the Boks are playing a much more attacking brand of rugby at the moment, and Scotland and Ireland both went out and sort of placed the marker. I mean, Scotland scored 45 points, Ireland scored over 50 against Tonga. While Tonga can give you trouble, and we saw that in 2007 in Lance in that famous game where they almost, I think it was a bounce of a ball that almost cost the Boks victory there. This is the type of team you need to place that marker. And I mean, you need to do pretty much similar to what Ireland did, because it might, I know it may be a long shot, but it might come down to points difference at some point.
You will need Scotland to come to the party in a very significant way to bring any doubt to, the outcome of this pool. They'll need 10 points, basically, including the win over Ireland to bring it to that sort of situation. So that is unlikely. But from a South African perspective, you obviously need to just make sure that you steer yourself clear of that potential or that, the trouble that might hold. We spoke about Tonga. You spoke about Tonga. If you look at their performance against Scotland, it's quite clear that they pack a punch in the scrums. Just generally speaking, in the collisions, I mean, they will bring some force. So while the scrum is something that they might look forward to, their lineout is a bit wonky, no doubt about that. And also their defense, while when they make a tackle, they make it stick. They don't make all their tackles. They missed 48 tackles against Scotland, which is a significant number. To be fair, Scotland had a lot of the ball, but to miss 48 tackles is a significant number. So, I think the Boks will push and prod and they will find gaps and they'll find holes. If they just go about their business in a proper way, they should get the 5 points. I don't see how they won't.
It'd be interesting also to see how the discipline, because Tonga's obviously lost Fifita for that head clash. They are a team that can stray on discipline, and And if that would have maybe influenced the way they make their tackles in any way, probably not. But we might see a card or two in that game again. Yeah, so that's also be a factor there. Marco van Staden at hooker. I must admit, I'm still shaking my head at this one. But yeah, it is what we have, and he is the reserve hooker now.
To be fair, I think for this game, it was always going to be that. Bongi has played, I think, something like 14 tests in a row, 14 or 15. He missed a test against Argentina last year, and since then, he has pretty much been involved in every game. So there's no doubt that he needs a break. And for what the Bucks have been arguing when they decided to go with Pollard as Malcolm Marx's replacement, and then having Dion Fourie and Marco van Staden as the backup hookers, they made their own bed there. So in other words, these two have to play in this game. I mean, there's no way around it. But I'm with you in that when you look at the team sheet and you see Marco van Staden's name as the the backup,
yeah, Zucca, yeah.
It leaves you with a bit of a chill. Yeah.
Yeah, no, exactly. Saying on that, on Malcolm Marx, I think in my just sitting there in the Stade de France, and maybe we can just chat. I was over there courtesy of the wonderful people at Castle Lager, who gave me a last-minute invitation. And Liam knows behind the scenes how I scrambled to get a Schengen visa in a day and a half, which, you know, thankfully came through to some wonderful people at the French tourism guys. It helped us out there. But it was a very different experience, obviously, traveling with a touring group than what Liam, you know, obviously covering the box, what you're doing. And I'm not going to lie, the guys really, really kept me busy. There was a bunch of very thirsty guys on that trip, and as they should be.
When you say busy, what do you mean?
Well, I was trying to explain that. They're very thirsty, these guys. Obviously, it's an SA Breweries group, so they were very, very thirsty, these guys. So we tended to stay away from the wine, which I know I'm going
to
get
some. I was about to say, you know, this is partly a wine show, apparently.
Yes.
So you did not. So you traveled to France. You spent 11 hours in an aircraft to get there. And at no point. How many meals did you have while you were on the ground?
I was there for 3 days. It was a whirlwind. But there wasn't wine involved in any of those meals, unfortunately. In fact, the closest I came to wine was on the aircraft. So. Yeah, I feel like you have to...
Deeply disconcerting.
I feel like you have to throw in that, you know, the Game of Thrones meme of the woman behind the woman saying shame, ringing the bell, and me walking out.
To drag you through the village kind of thing, yeah.
No, it was interesting. And you learn that beer prices aren't for the faint-hearted at the games either. If you're outside in the fan box... it's €8.50, which is quite heavy. In the stadium, it's €10 for a beer. So from a South African point of view,
yeah, the ten is yeah. I almost used a particular phrase, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, it was very, very sore for any South African. You close your eyes and you buy the beer, but and yeah, it's not the greatest. Yeah, to pay that, you can't.
And then you had an aperitif as well at some point, didn't you?
Yes, at some point we tended to go for the odd Jägermeister, which tends to happen in these evenings. And €7 for a Jägermeister, to help settle the stomach, that's why we had it, of course. But €7 a pop is quite hectic.
Yeah, I had to introduce one of my fellow travelers, another journalist, to pastis, which is a drink. It's an aperitif that you would find in the south, typically in the south of France. It's very much a Marseille thing. And it settles the stomach as well, because he's been complaining every second day about his stomach. I mean, he would, whether he eats a dry cracker or a piece of sandpaper, it seems to have the same effect.
Apparently, the water, by the way. We've got a theory in our family that's the water, apparently.
Oh, well.
It's obviously not the water. But
so, yeah, I introduced him to pastis and it didn't seem to help. And then the other day, I showed him a little Cambodian restaurant. It's more like a takeaway place. And of course, that didn't help either. And when he explained his sort of travails afterwards, we're thinking of giving him the new nickname, Pol Pot.
I think I know exactly who you're talking about as well. So that'd be interesting. But listen, that experience at Stade de France, and I mean, you and I have both watched a lot of tests in our careers. It was nice being in the fan and with fans again, and watching it out of the out of the stands. But for me, that game ranks pretty highly amongst some of the games I've watched. And it just, it's hard to explain to people the intensity and some of those hits that you could really hear the hits and almost bone crunching that you almost want to wince when you see that. And it was such a tense game to be in that stadium, and there were so many flipping Irish people. I think probably three quarters of that stadium was Irish fans.
In fact, Johnny Sexton made the point that before the game, people said that there'd be something like 30,000 Irishmen and women in Paris. And in the press conference, he turned to Andy Farrell and he said, no, it really felt like 60,000. And he's probably not far off.
No, well, there was South African fans were in the minority there, very much so. But yeah, I mean, look, I mean, if you talk in terms of box losses at World Cups, I was at Brighton. I was at when we lost against Japan. I was at Wellington when we lost against Australia, the Bryce Lawrence game. Those were probably the two worst. This doesn't come even close to that. It actually felt, you actually walked out that stadium thinking, geez, that was one hell of a game to be at, and felt very privileged to walk out that stadium having watched that. But you also felt the situation where, how did the box lose that? And I mean, everyone's focused on the goal kicking, but you know, you got to the point where they made so many elementary errors on attack at times that you almost got a bit frustrated at that.
Yes, and it's not the first time because, you know, they tick all the boxes, whether it's in the scrum and the line out. And there, obviously, you would lose the odd one, and there were two crucial scrum penalties, obviously, but on the whole, they scrum quite well in that game. Lineout was fine. They didn't maul that much, which in itself is an almost different podcast. And in the attack, especially when they got into the red zone, they just couldn't apply the finishing touches. And that's not the first time. I mean, there are other matches we can reflect on where that has happened as well. And in fact, Jacques Minaba made the point where he said the goal kicking, while it was a problem, he's more concerned about the fact that they couldn't finish, because obviously your reward is so much greater if you're able to get over the line. So that is definitely something of a department in their game that they will need to sharpen up on. But this weekend against Tonga would kind of help them. But then again, there's such a leap in quality between some of these teams, because you have Scotland, then you suddenly play Romania, and you know, the same intensity just isn't there. Then they play Ireland, and then now Tonga, and it's, you know, a bit of a seesawing exercise. But one way or the other, they need to solve that by the time they play in the quarterfinals, because at the moment it looks like they're going to be playing the host nation, France.
Yeah, and obviously all the quite interestingly, all the talk has been about Anton Dupont and getting back before the quarterfinals, and we all want to see the best players play in the knockout rounds. I just had an interesting thought, which I thought Johan Dijssel, who got banned for 5 weeks for that head clash that fractured Dupont's cheek. If it was any other player that had a head clash, and given the inconsistencies in the disciplinary process.
Come on, Brendan. You cannot take out the face of the World Cup, quite literally, the face of the World Cup. If you travel around France, the face that you see is Antoine Dupont. And now you go there and you just shatter this face, basically leaving the World Cup in tatters. In fact, I think somebody wrote that it was likened to somebody walking into the Louvre and defacing the Mona Lisa.
Yeah, that's taking it a bit. That's taking a bit far. But you sort of wonder, if it was any other player, would he have got a 12-week entry point where everybody else gets a 6-week entry point? But it is what it is, and now we're going to have the spectre of having the mini Hannibal Lecter coming back at the box. You know, with the face mask, which is going to, of course. Yeah, the face of the World Cup is going to become very different and
be very
all the headlines.
Yeah. We're going to find out the man lifting the World Cup is Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting. But obviously, Yeah, the Bucks will have to tick that box to get to the quarterfinals, but it's going to be a very interesting clash against France. Just one question, because I heard that a lot from fans while I was in Paris. There's this weird conspiracy theory going around that we wanted to throw this game because we wanted to play France. Do you think the Bucks wanted to play France, or do you think they didn't really care?
I think where their game is at, they would have felt quite comfortable against New Zealand or France. So, no, that's a very silly conspiracy theory. That's just something that somebody over his 29th beer decided, oh, this is a good idea. Let's put this out in the universe.
Yeah, well, there were a couple of those people I was with on during the trip, so I'm sure that's probably where it emanated from. I suppose there's some other rugby going on in the World Cup, and we should actually quickly just talk about that. There's Eddie Jones has left Australia in a very, very uncomfortable position at the moment. And, I mean, I didn't see the game because I was on the flight, but I saw the highlights afterwards, and it just looked like Australia went nowhere. And I can just imagine, yeah, all those quotes of Eddie saying, oh, mate, if you don't know rugby, don't come talk to me, coming back to haunt him now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's been very front footish in the way he's put down journalists. And I'm afraid to say they're going to have the last laugh, because that Australian performance was just about as blunt as I've seen. I mean, I didn't attend the 97 game when they lost to the Bucks in Pretoria, but I have seen some poor Wallaby teams. But this doesn't, that performance doesn't rank with that. It's just like they didn't fire any shots. They didn't look capable of firing any shots. And I mean, I don't even think Wales were that great. Wales sort of turned up and played what you would expect from a Warren Gatland coach team. And there was nothing coming back from the other side of the net. It was quite bizarre. And somebody posted, I mean, one of the ex-players posted on Twitter, you know, the Wallaby players' reaction afterwards and how broken they were, how emotionally shattered they were, and how much, because people were questioning whether, you know, it means enough, or whether they, you know, the effort was there. And clearly the effort was there, but then you need to ask the question, were these guys tooled and equipped to play that game, or play the game, any game in this World Cup for that matter, because they just looked well short of where they're supposed to be.
Yeah, you sort of wonder also if Eddie's just lost the change room. I mean, we've all covered teams, you know, where that little 1 or 2% belief that you need extra is just not there, and that makes a huge difference when it comes to a game like this.
Yeah, he made those big selection calls, and in moments you could see it in that game against Wales, where you needed calm heads to prevail, and you know, experience, and this is big experience coming in. And if you want to leave people like Mike Loop and Quade Cooper out, then it comes to bite you the way it did.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, Wales now, if I read BBC Wales and Wales Online, they've almost won the World Cup. The same with the English papers. Steve Borthwick has performed miracles, apparently. The fact that they haven't really come up against a top five side in world rugby, I suppose, doesn't really matter.
They played odd. They beat Argentina, and they were efficient on that night, because they were a man down, so they regrouped very nicely in that game, and good on them for that. But apart from that, I mean, they haven't done anything spectacular, because if you look at the rest of the group. They still need to play their quarterfinal, and you know, be judged on that.
You sort of get the feeling that, you know, their biggest hope is that they get enough momentum and they catch one of the bigger sides on the off day, being a bit battered by, obviously, all the other big games they've played.
Yeah, momentum and belief, I think. Belief is going to be and England can attach themselves to that very quickly. That thing, that's something they've proved at World Cups. They get a bit of belief, and suddenly anything is possible.
But yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. The box need to tick boxes. We need to obviously get into the quarterfinals. Next week, there's a 2-week break, so the box have got some time off. So we'll look to look a bit more in depth as well. Oh, and yes, of course, while we're talking, Liam's just waving a bottle of wine at me through the Zoom link here. So tell us a bit more about your wine that you're drinking, Liam. Shame me a bit more that I didn't drink wine in France.
You didn't do what? I went to a little wine shop around the corner the other day, and as you walk in, because Provence is obviously rosé country. I mean, they make fabulous rosés. I'm not a big rosé drinker necessarily at home, but if you hear, and given the climate, and given what nature offers you, what ends up on your plate, a glass of rosé is usually the thing that you you find most welcoming. And again, because of the South African rand, I had to rein myself in a little bit. So it's a bottle of Côte de Mer, and it's from Château de Beaumetz. I'm not entirely sure where it is. They've got a few different things here on the label. And I had this with a Provençal stew the other day, a sausage stew. And it was wonderful. I have to say it did exactly what it was supposed to do. And I've got half a bottle left. And I will go to the indoor. There's a fabulous indoor market here in Toulon. Wonderful fresh produce. And I'll take a bit of a gander through that later on this afternoon. And plow my way through the rest of this bottle.
Yeah, I'm struggling to understand what you mean by half a bottle. Is that like leftover wine? One of those strange concepts we don't see in South Africa.
I have to pace myself, Brendan.
Of course, you're working. I forget you're working. Well, on that note, I think we've had a good chat. We'll chat to you after the Tonga game, and we'll know whether the Boks are in the quarterfinals, and we'll probably know a lot more if Hannibal Dupont is going to be in that quarterfinal as well. But this has been To The Last Drop. I'm Brendan Nell. I'm with DM.com. Thanks for listening. We'll chat to you guys next week.
Thanks for listening. And a reminder, you can find all the To The Last Drop podcasts on the Brendan Nell YouTube channel, iono.fm, Spotify, player.fm, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, and iTunes, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.